Wait, you're saying Jordan had a Hitler stash? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Bro, low-key, you don't remember that shit?
No. Wait, hold on. Let me look it up, because... I'm going to look it up now.
Yeah, look it up.
I remember it being, like, thin on the sides, and then, like, it kind of came in the middle, and then... oh my gosh.
Bro, look at this.
Oh my.
It's the Hitler stash.
Okay. I want to be like Mike. See, Kyle.
Bro, and he got away with it because it's Michael Jordan.
Oh man, he was.
I don't think he was trying to like literally be like, oh, I support Hitler.
Oh, but he was in the Space Jam, though.
I just feel like Michael Jordan was like, hey, this looks cool on me, so I'm just gonna do it and count on the fact that nobody will call me out because I'm Michael Jordan.
Right. So are the Chicago Bulls like the Nazi? No, is it like a secret? No,
are they the Empire?
They are. You know, do you know what happens when you turn the Chicago Bulls logo upside down?
What happens? Oh, is it a crab?
No, it's like a robot having sex with a crab, something like
that. Oh, yes, yes, I've seen that. It's a robot having sex with a crab.
Now you can't hear that, listeners, if it was Mooney.
Wow. Turn the Bulls logo upside down, listeners, and open up your imagination a little bit. It's very much fucking a crab right up the ass.
Oh, man.
It's a fun visual.
Dude, but seriously, man, cheers. Cheers. Thank you.
Cheers.
On this
cheers.
21st episode. Jeez, we low-key have just gone through 20 of these. Jeez.
21st episode. Hey, congrats to you,
old
man.
Old enough to drink. Mooney's old enough to drink, guys.
Old enough to drink. Whoa. Well, 21 weeks is not the same as 21 years, but hopefully we'll be here 21 years from now.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll both be here 21, both living-wise and it was Mooney-wise.
It was Mooney for 2,000 years, all the seasons, it was Mooney. Yes, but yes, I wanna welcome y'all. I'm your host, Cosi, and it was and welcome to It Was Mooney, your source for all things movie streaming and pop culture related. I'm your host, Cosi, and I'm joined always by Wani B. And you know what? Kind of felt kind of empty with the studio with Lawson Maurice. I know he had to take him out to the rice paddy a couple weeks back.
No more Maurice. He left us. We didn't. It's not a euphemism. He left us for some rice patties because he found some fine bee up on that rice paddy and decided that he had better things to do than chilling with us in the studio. No guests this week either. It's just me and Cosi.
Yes, it's just me and Juan and me doing the sick vocals. But yes,
yeah, it's a lonely little studio today.
It is a little bit of an echo, but no, we definitely have a lot in store. So Juan, what's on tap for today's show, brother?
Today we're taking it topical. We're going mostly into the Olympics.
Oh man, I legit, this is like the first time in my career and in my life where I've just not cared or just forgot that the Olympics were on this year.
I didn't entirely. I did watch some Simone Biles. I did watch that French swimmer dude that was freakishly better than everyone else. What's her name? Katie Ledecky is also on the American side. I know the French dude is different. I'm just they actually kind of look similar though.
Yeah, dude. Like,
you know who Katie Ledecky? I know some people are probably gonna get offended at this. Uh-oh. David Ledecky looks like Tim Robinson from. Oh, what's that TV show?
Tim Robbins?
No, not Tim Robbins. Tim Robinson. I Think You Should Leave.
Oh, man.
The guy from I Think You Should Leave. She looks like Tim Robbins with a wig.
Oh, like,
put
no,
them side by side. Not, put them side by side. I swear to God, they look exactly the same. I'm sorry. I know she's an Olympic hero. I'm very proud of being in the same country as her and all.
She's
one of the GOATs, I think. She's a competitor for the girl and female swimmers, but she also looks like Tim Robinson with a wig. I'm sorry to call her out.
It's only where, hey, like seriously, you'll get some love, but also you're gonna get some hate from our very own hate in the studio one. That's great.
Yeah. Speaking of hating, we are debuting Debuting. Sorry,
I, man, I hate you already. I'm getting the hate started. I hate you for
sorry, yo, English is not my first language. I'm gonna use that as an excuse every time I say something wrong.
Of course.
Like Galacticus. It's because English is not my first language.
Dude, Galacticus. Hey, shout out to the friend of the show, Aaron, for calling this guy out about.
We did a whole entire show, and I said Galacticus 20 times.
I legit thought, like, oh, like, I just.
Two other people sat in here, Aaron, and apparently didn't notice. I contend it's because Galacticus is a better name, but
no, you can't do that one.
I am trying to not be proven wrong, but anyways, we're debuting a new segment today. It's called the Play Haters Reel.
Ooh.
So if you, for listeners of last week, you'll kind of notice a similar vibe. It's basically the exact opposite of the segment we had last week. Yeah, Dirty Little Cinema. Instead of going for the porn angle, no, I'm kidding. It's a instead of a guilty pleasure movie, we're going for a popular movie, generally well-regarded, well-liked movie.
And the movie
that we're going
to
shit on.
And the movie that you gave me, like, prior to the show, I was like, oh, it got my eyebrows raised. So
yeah,
I'm excited
it's,
to get
we have a, we'll give you guys a good example of what we're going for, and then we'll give you the actual movie we're here to hate on today.
No, I'm definitely excited for that.
It's great. Definitely an opportunity. I'll always take a free chance to hate on something. It's
our resident hater wannabe. Now, seriously, man, I love the energy you bring to It Was Mooney. So this segment really was awesome when you pitched it. So
this is
a shout out
to my idol Skip Bayless. Except actually, fuck Skip Bayless, because if he heard me calling him his idol, he would not be able to look at me with respect.
So he'd hate on you for not hating on him more.
Yeah. Skip Bayless only respects the hate within your heart.
Yes.
He does not appreciate brown nosing at all.
The irreplaceable Skip Bayless. Yes, ladies and gentlemen.
Apparently getting replaced soon on Fox.
Yeah, but he'll be all right.
Getting back to the Olympic sports ball. I don't even know if we can call it sports ball because it's patriotic, right? It feels like a current event.
Yeah, it really does. I think just going back to what we were saying about the Olympics, it feels as though like it kind of just came and it's almost over now. But like I didn't even realize it was here. But throughout the Olympics, there are just like a bunch of like different things that like it gave me like little like gauges of where they're at in the Olympics. So like the opening ceremony, the whole thing with like over in Paris, there's this river called the River Seine, and it's just notoriously just dirty river, kind of the Hudson in New York. So like what I thought was hilarious is like the opening games of it, like you see LeBron James in a poncho because like there was like wind whipping the water up, so he's like not trying to get the dirty
I think
water
it was
up.
Rainy too.
Yeah, it was just gross that day.
Yeah, bad look. Then they had the last, they say it's not supposed to be the Last Supper. It looked a lot like it.
A little bit like it.
Something about Dionysus, the Greek god of wine.
Of wine, yeah. It was a recreation of like the Leonardo da Vinci's famous painting.
Supposedly it wasn't. But it's hard, especially that first camera shot.
Oh, yeah.
The first opening camera shot, I mean, it's such a famous painting. It's impossible not to get the reference,
yeah, and,
right,
and, yeah, man, and if
you
I'm
see the
like,
central lady with the halo, mm-hmm. you see the figures on the side,
on the table, like
the,
all
it's
spread
impossible
out.
To look at the. I mean, and you know, it's you know Leonardo da Vinci was Italian, right?
Yes,
this was. I mean, the painting, the actual Last Supper is probably sitting in a French museum right now. You know what I mean? The Mona Lisa is right. Like it's not like these people are ignorant.
I think what I love most about this, the whole thing was though, yes, like knee-jerk reaction, but it was like knee-jerk reaction from like, you know, but if I'm like from like a specific audience, like the right-wing Christians got really, really up in arms. Like I get it, at a glance, it looks as though it was like,
you know,
defacing
what?
I'll say defaming. I get it. I definitely get it.
Yeah, sorry. It's not just the hardcore MAGA dudes. Like my mom. My mom is very religious, very Christian.
Just religious people. Okay.
She's probably gonna end up voting for Kamala, right? She doesn't like Trump at all. But that's for another day. But the point is, you know, for her, it's like, hey, this feels a little offensive. It's like,
yeah.
And on some level, it does feel like part of what these people find offensive is that there were some LGBTQ performers.
Or like a gender bent versions of like characters.
And
like
it's some drag kind of vibe.
Yeah, it definitely looked, again, everything's at a glance. Like, and like,
yeah, I don't know the exact details, but there were, it definitely had a Last Supper but drag queen vibes to it. And on some level, I appreciate the art and, you know, being creative and being original and stuff. On another level, you know, the Olympics is kind of the ultimate show that's supposed to be for everyone.
Yeah,
right.
It's the globe. It's a global
the ultimate
event.
Neutral. The ultimate bring everyone together. I don't know. It felt a tiny bit tasteless. Like, I don't. I'm not like offended, right? I'm not offended like some of these people. I thought it was creative in a way. It probably wasn't the time and place for it.
I understand it because, you know, it's Paris. It's a city of art, fashion, just provocateur. Like,
haute couture.
It definitely fit the vibes of what Paris was bringing. They want to have their own spin. They also have like this, like these videos, like almost music video esque performances, like to accompany it. Like, yes, it was all provocative, and it definitely felt very European and whatnot. But I can see how, like, for something that's supposed to be for a global stage, it feeling really like.
If
not
you remember,
but like,
the Beijing, those are like my go-to. That the Beijing,
like the drummers.
Opening Olympics,
the whole
show,
yeah, that was amazing.
Again, I don't know. You just want to see a kind of regal beauty, a kind of elegance, a kind of. These people are supposed to be above it all, right? These people are like supposed to be the excellence and the pinnacle of humanity, in a certain way. I can see why people get upset. I didn't get overly upset, but it didn't. It felt a little like they were trying to be provocative and being a little artsy, like postmodern, as opposed to just making something that's widely and safely beautiful. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. And I think what the French did in this regard was beauty is definitely in the eye of the beholder. It's definitely something like art. It's all subjective. Like what you find, what I find beautiful, you might find provocative or maybe tasteless. So like I respect the big swings. I also definitely understand how at a glance, if you're not, because nowadays we're just shotgun blasted with like images and different stuff. At a glance, it might look like this, or our knee-jerk reaction is to do that. But, and we'll kind of get to in like a story coming up, you know, these knee-jerk reactions, these like, oh, I'm outraged without really thinking or without really doing the due diligence, the research. Like, it can be dangerous and like, you know, it's kind of harmful. It was like in this case, but like, there's sometimes where like we need to try to be better at like making sure of the information we're getting, making sure of like
that's a fair point. That's a fair point. Sometimes though,
it's really easy to react.
It can be a little bit the other way too, where it's like sometimes people make explanations and add context to stuff, where it's like again, the people who are saying, "Oh, this wasn't inspired by the Last Supper at all," I'm like, really? Had you just never seen the painting?
Yeah, it was definitely. Yeah.
Like, that's hard to believe.
You can at least admit that part.
Yeah, that's hard to believe. That just sounds like you're covering your ass, right? Like, that just sounds like, oops, I went a little too far, and instead of standing by, I'm going to pretend. I'm going to play dumb. So, it feels like my knee-jerk reaction wasn't entirely off, so to speak. Right. No. Definitely, some context helps sometimes, but people take advantage of that and add context that you know is made up after the fact. You know what I mean? Like, they're just trying to cover their ass. They're just trying to. They realize they did something wrong and they don't want to take responsibility. Yeah. But anyways, moving on. Let's discuss some of the actual athletics. And I think, Kosi, you wanted to do kind of a mini ride or die version of it to go over some of these takes, or?
Well, no. Well, I guess because we might have to scrap the ride or die part because we're already in it, but we'll go to the Turkish guy, which I really wanted to talk about in terms of sports, because you've seen the memes, you've seen like almost the anime recreations of all of the shooting competition. A dude that's been taking over, like.
So for the uninitiated, basically the. I don't know, you know all the details, but in the shooting competition, like a shooting with guns, with airsoft pistols, I believe they're not like live rounds.
Yeah,
I've heard that that's the excuse why the Americans are bad at this sport, because they're not using real guns.
Yeah, it's not pointed at moving targets and whatnot.
Yeah, so. if it was real guns, the Americans would win.
Of course,
that's going to be our excuse from here on out. But no, so this Turkish guy. So if you've seen the shooting competition, there's a lot of memes, especially this one Korean girl. But not just her, like a lot of these people, they showed up in full gear, right? Like these big headphones, which again, they're not real guns. So the headphones turn out to be for the crowd noise, not because they look like ear protection from like gun protection.
Yeah, they look like robots. Like they have like these things over their eyes to like help their vision. And
yeah,
whatnot.
If you've ever seen an anime where they have the little reticle over their left eye,
it's like Dragon Ball Z with a reader.
The little reader, the over 9,000 reader. Yeah, the powder. Yeah, it's something like that. So they cover one of their eyes so that they have like, I guess, better accuracy. Worse depth of vision, right? More worse breath, but like more accurate, more like still image, I guess. I'm not sure what all the details are.
And then you have some guys that are like in a weird pose, like almost like a JoJo Bizarre Adventure character. But
yeah,
like,
that guy looked like he was trying to do some anime stuff.
But like
he was trying to be an actual anime character.
So you have like a bunch of androids and like anime villains, and then you have just this, like
overly nerdy looking stuff for a shooting competition.
Then you have this Turkish guy.
Yeah, and then so there's comes this Turkish guy, nothing. Just regular ass glasses.
Prescription
glasses,
but they're not new. He's had them for a minute.
He's just wearing a t-shirt. He has earplugs, obviously. There's ear protection.
Yeah.
But it's just regular as earplugs, right? It's the kind of thing you'd wear to a shooting range. He doesn't have these big, massive noise-canceling headphones like everybody else has, which, again, they're not live rounds. So they're not even protecting their ears. They're just trying to not get distracted by the crowd noise is what I found. He had his hand in his pocket, which is a real technique for counterbalancing the force, but he just looked so casual. He looked like some random Turkish dad just got up and decided to show up the Olympics that day, and then he got a silver medal. His team got a silver medal with him on it.
Yeah, and I gotta give the guy a shout out. His name is Yusuf Dikic, or Dikic. I want to say he's from Turkey. He is 51. And, you know, just a lot of fascinating stuff about him, but what I've been finding on the internet about him, he didn't just roll out of bed and compete, no. He's been competing for a while. He's actually really, really good at shooting in his native Turkey, so he's been competing in the Olympics before. It's his first ever time he won a medal. So it's a big deal for him, and like he's now just getting all this acclaim. So no, it was really cool to see that. And I think what I love the most about this is like, you know, it's that story of, you know, that one kid in class that like studied and like read the notes, did the extra credit, and then like, but you have this one kid who like, you know, just kind of kept it easy, played it safe, studied the night before, but like he walked in just calm and cool and like still aced the test and like. It's that part, like the Olympics shows us like people pushing their limits and like straining, but this guy is just did it and asked for a cigarette. Like, he asked afterwards, "Hey, where can I go smoke this?" And like they pointed him to the direction. So it's really cool. I love that.
He loves cats, so always a big shout out to that. Yes. He's a big cat lover, so always a place in my heart for cat lovers.
And there was some weird, like, again, just in this age of just crazy misinformation, conspiracy, there's this whole backstory at first when there was like a big Instagram.
Oh, that he was a secret agent?
Yeah, that he was like trained by Turkey and they kind of brought him out of retirement and they said, and he got divorced and like, his winnings was to get like only he wanted his dog back in divorce. It was some like real John Wick type stuff they made up because the internet likes to just mess with
that's
us.
That's how some memes about that, like how everybody else was trying to get as narrow a field of view as possible because they were just focused on a target, but how law enforcement and military guys would not want to cover their eyes so they could get a wide view as possible. Like just weird shit like that. It's hilarious though. It's nice when the conspiracies are for lighthearted stuff like this and not for evil, life-threatening stuff.
Of course. So like again, shout out to Yusuf Dikic of Turkey, man. Great stuff, brother.
Yeah, so moving on, I want to give a quick shout out. I don't know how much more there is to say, but Simone Biles.
Oh, of course.
I think she goes down pretty much as the GOAT for gymnastics.
So on here, I want to make sure I got this correct, because she has 16 gold medals right now, and that puts her third all time in medals. So let me make sure I got that right. But yeah. She and the women's gymnastics team have just done incredible.
Honestly, if you just watch her, if you watch her gymnastics, it's not like the other people are untalented or anything, but she does some freak of nature stuff.
Yep.
Like gymnastics is generally almost like a beauty company. I know there's plenty of athletic skill and talent there, but it's almost like a little bit of like an artistic kind of beautiful thing. Not that Simone Biles isn't, you know, have the artistic and beauty to it, but the raw power.
Yeah, like a lot of grace.
You realize you're watching a special athlete.
Yeah, and I want to say she has 11 Olympic Olympic medals, and she's tied for the second all time of the most decorated gymnast. So she still has another Olympics that down the line. So that could definitely
maybe. Yeah. I don't think she's fully committed to the next one.
Yeah, so yes, of course.
No, I mean it's just freakish to watch. Like her ability to get up in the air, to jump up, to have control.
Did you see that image they showed that, like, her and Shaq, and who's, like, 7 foot, like, four or whatever, and she can, like, clear that because she can clear, like, 10 feet. It's, like, it's crazy.
It's stupid.
She's, like, 4'8".
Yeah, she's a tiny, tiny person, but she can just jump over tall men. It's inspiring to watch. There's been a lot of cool athletic performances. I can't remember his name. There was a French guy, the French swimmer who won big in his category. Katie Ledecky, we already talked about a little bit. A couple other big performances. What about you, Kosi? Any other standouts?
The French judo champion. I got to get his name. But he had a great match against Japan in the Tokyo Olympics a while back. The Tokyo team beat the French team in Tokyo, so now like they kind of came and tried to exact revenge and whatnot. So it was it was just a great match. I remember coming in, I came in late to the match. I was watching with a friend of the show, Eric, at the time. So Teddy Riner is the French judo champion's name, and so came down to the wire. So the French were down two matches, and they won all the way back to make it to like sudden death judo. So the way it works is they have to spin like a wheel to pick what weight class goes and fights for a sudden death. And so like it went to the biggest weight class, so Teddy of France had to go in there and fight, and it was just it felt like a movie. So like and the way it works, you have to like make sure you flip your opponent on their back, and he got it. So that's, again, it's what you love about sports, just triumph, especially on your home soil. Like, they're chanting, like, I don't speak French, but they're chanting in French, and it was great. It was a great.
Allez.
Yeah, no, it was fantastic. So, and also, Teddy Riner, just a dangerous judo champion, but a handsome guy. I just love seeing handsome guys that can also fight. It's a great combination. I'm super jealous, but also very, very attracted. So this is a great win for France and great win for Teddy. So shout out to him, brother, for being a judo gold medalist.
Okay. No, definitely shout out to all these people. So we're going to take it a little more controversial real quick. Talk about the boxer from Algeria.
Oh, yeah, Iman Khalif. You make sure to get her name right.
Yeah, so basically the story kind of came out. She fought this Italian girl. I think her name was Carini.
Yeah, Carini. Angela Carini.
Angela Carini.
Yeah, she knocked, like, just she in 46 so seconds just knocked her.
It wasn't even a knockout. Like, Carini just quit the fight very early on. And it felt weird. It didn't feel like she got rocked or like she was, you know, tumbling. It didn't feel like something had happened to her. She just suddenly quit the fight. And then it kind of came out.
I will say, like, rewatching the footage, it didn't look, it wasn't pretty. Like, I'll say that. I'm not a boxer per se, but like having someone just tee off on you like that, it didn't look good. So I can honestly see on Carini's part why she'd want to say no mas to this.
Felt a little bizarre. It turns out, I mean, she might have had a recent nose surgery that affected it more than
different things as it comes, like everything as it comes out, the more information is being
revealed. Main storyline, and it had been a little bit of a storyline before that, was that she had supposedly failed a gender test and back in I think 2022 or 2023. The IBA, the International Boxing Association, which is a Russian organization that's going to be relevant in a second.
Yes, it does.
Basically, they came out and said, okay, no, she failed gender test.
Yeah, she had like high-level testosterone.
Can't really tell you what it is, but she supposedly has high testosterone and has the Y chromosome. And obviously, as the biologically inclined know from genetics class, it's Y chromosome generally means you're a man.
Yes.
Right? So the idea was that he was supposedly a biological male that had transitioned and was now beating up on women.
And that's initially when it was presented. I thought, okay, was this a situation where he had the advantage of training and living as a man for most of, I thought, his life, and then transitioned, which, you know, if they want to come in and compete, that's fine. But, like, that was what I thought was kind of was unclear. I thought that's what it was.
There's definitely regulations initially about what is and isn't allowed, and I think the science isn't fully settled.
And make no mistake, I think we should be clear on that. Like, it would be a problem if there was actual, like, a man just beating up on women in the ring, if that was the
case. So it was clearly a man, yes. I feel like part of the problem with what I have with what you're saying is that, you know, the IOC, the International Olympics Committee, I mean, you know, they have an interest in safeguarding the sport. The idea that they're, I don't know, so woke that they're going to allow some random dude that just claims they're a woman. You know, there's rules and standards to this, yeah, right? There's hormones they have to take. There's testosterone levels they have to meet. To the point, she had actually competed, Iman had actually competed in previous Olympics without anybody saying anything.
Yeah, with no issues.
She did not go through and easily dominate and get all gold medals like you would expect an actual man to do. Her boxing career is nice. I mean, she's obviously an Olympian, but it's not the kind of boxing record where you'd be like, oh my God, she's...
There's no clear advantage here.
Like, she's clearly, Mike Tyson fighting amongst a bunch of women.
Which I think speaking of knee-jerk reactions, which I think we're all definitely guilty of this. The knee-jerk reaction was that is what is like the worst
scenario. Supposedly
that's
why she got disqualified.
Yeah.
Now, what came out a little bit afterwards, too, is that one, the IBA never really has released its exact methodology for how they determined that she was ineligible and that she was supposedly a man. Mm. Two, I mean, they've even shown like pictures of her as a kid. Like, she was born a woman. Allegedly, possibly, she has a condition where she's like intersex or has elevated testosterone.
But she definitely has these sex organs of a woman.
She grew up a woman. She's from a country that, quite frankly, Algeria would not send a transgender person to represent them in the Olympics.
Yeah, they won't necessarily, like, they won't like jail them, but it's like, it's
they
not,
actually, I think they will they jail will,
okay.
them.
Okay, so but
I think they even will, but they might not openly execute them,
yeah,
which is
that, yeah,
is supposedly progress. but you know, the idea that they're gonna have somebody like that openly representing them in the Olympics, they just to, you know, try to win a medal, is kind of silly.
So the whole thing kind of just felt kind of like weird. Like, since it felt sensational, I feel as though, like, if there's something like you, I think a rule of thumb we can all kind of follow here is like if you read it and it just seems really sensational, a lot of times if you should really stop and just look, because a lot of times if it's that bad or that crazy, there's some other things to it. Most of the time, it's what we're seeing. So
yeah,
I think
one
that's
big context that we haven't mentioned, and I didn't mention earlier, how the IBA was a Russian organization. So supposedly, when they actually disqualified her, she was competing in some, I think, world championships, mm-hmm. and suddenly got disqualified, not before the competition, but in the middle of it, after she beat a previously undefeated Russian athlete.
Russian, okay. Yeah.
Some additional context is that the Olympics no longer recognizes the IBA and considers them too corrupt, too self-serving.
Yeah, they're banned, yeah.
So they're banned from Olympics consideration. So,
funny.
The only people that are claiming that she's a man are people who only did it when it was convenient for their country and pride and probably wallet to do so.
And are now banned from the very
And
Olympics
are now banned for being too corrupt and dishonest.
Okay.
So, you know, we potentially ruined this poor woman's life. You know, frankly, I'm going to call people out here. Part of the reason she got called out, you know, she's not a looker. I know I made fun of Katie Ledecky earlier.
Oh,
but she's not somebody that, you know, looks, you know, conventionally attractive.
I know what you mean. Like the way Angelina Carini looks, she's not traditional. Like, it may, I see what you mean. It's not, you won't say, oh,
she's tall. Yeah. She got kind of broad shoulder. Kind
she's
of
a boxer, though. She's an athlete.
Yeah. And you know, again, these women are not here to win beauty pageants.
Of course.
They're here to win medals.
In boxing, you're getting your face beat in.
You're getting your face beat in. They're not getting prizes for looking the most attractive. That's not what these medals are about. I'm sure a bunch of dudes wish it was. But look, this is not some man who cheated to be there. I think there's a lot of people who owe this woman an apology. They won't give it to her because these people probably still believe fully that she's a man.
Well, no, it's not even, well, there's that, but it's just too late now. The way the internet, the way things go,
you could have the decency. Yeah, it wouldn't reach her, but you could have the personal decency to be like, hey, you know what? I was wrong. My bad. That's on me.
I don't see a lot of,
folks.
I don't see folks doing
that. No, they keep doubling down. When they're proven wrong, they just keep doubling down. And they keep saying it's the lamestream.
Well, I think the crazy outliers do, but for the most part, folks will just not say nothing because it was, 5 days ago? The way it works is like, dude, it's been like 10 days and we forgot that they almost killed Trump.
Most people on Twitter don't
Memory is like a gnat.
Frankly, almost. Obviously we're here on a podcast, but the idea of like posting, you know, my every thought on Twitter every time something interesting happens.
Right.
That's just not the kind of person I am, right? I like giving y'all, the audience, my thoughts, but, you know, in a measured, controlled way. Not just everything that's in my head has to be, you know, pooped out to the internet for everyone to see.
Yeah.
I feel like more people would benefit from that kind of philosophy where it's like, hey, maybe I don't need to instantly throw my every thought out into the internet.
But it gets clicks, it gets views, and, you know, I understand it, but when it comes to the detriment of other people's lives that we're seeing here, that's where it definitely gets
ugly.
I think
it honestly makes them happy. I think there's a certain segment of these people where knowing that they made this person's life worse
gives them joy.
Gives them some level of joy. I mean, it's truly...
It's a sad existence.
It's a pretty sad existence. I'm not saying they have like the worst lives. A lot of them have money. A lot of them have friends and family. But it's still a cruel way to look at the world, in my opinion. But moving on to something a little more lighthearted.
This one I'm actually really excited about. Yes, so
U.S. Olympic mascot Snoop Dogg and Flavor Flav.
Yeah, they... Not just mascots, they're... Well, Flava Flav is a hype man. Snoop Dogg is just a spokesperson mascot, kind of, like, where he's, like, everywhere. But Flava Flav, I think, what I love about what he's doing, like, they're both, you know, very prominent American rappers, but they've been all over the Olympic circuit, and for different reasons. First, I'll go with Snoop Dogg, I'll start off with. He's just at every single event. He had that meetup with Martha Stewart. I remember when Snoop Dogg was doing, I think it was the Winter Olympics with Kevin Hart. And like when that happened, I think everyone was like,
yes, I do remember that.
He was phenomenal on that. So they're like, hey, let's bring that back. So
was that the Russian ones? Soichi? Soichi or something.
I think so. But like,
but yeah, anyways,
and
continue.
But bring him back to, and they just thought, hey, let's get him back on here. He's like just at different events, just like hyping. Just different sports up, and I just love that. Like Snoop Dogg has just been a person where he wears many hats. He's a man of many talents and many different interests, and it's just cool seeing him in different outfits and different settings throughout the Paris Olympics. And then on the flip side here, we have a guy named Flava Flav. Phil, for all you youngins out there, Flava Flav is a famous rapper. He was part of a rap group called Public Enemy in the '90s. They just incredible band. Fight the Power is one of their big hits.
They're basically Black Panther, the rap group.
Yes, like not T'Challa Black Panther, but actual Nation of Islam Black Panthers. If they made a rap crew, they're amazing. Yeah,
Chuck D was on some shit. He was
he's
a legend. He's a legend.
Yeah. So Flava Flav was like their hype man. So now he's bringing that hype man to the Olympics, and he's doing it in a really cool way. So the U.S. water polo women's team, they were, you know, they're underfunded. So, you know, you got to do what you got to do, and you got to just, what they did was they kind of went on Twitter and like, hey, we need help. Like, because I learned this, like a lot of these times, like these Olympic people, athletes, they don't have like sponsors. Sometimes they're like, either they take themselves or have to get like donations. So it's not like not a lot of money, especially for like a water polo. It's not like gymnastics or like basketball, but like, you know, they needed some help, and Flava Flav got with the person that tweeted it, and next thing you know, he's there in Paris, and so is he. So it's just been great just to see Flava Flav just like be in the public sphere again.
He's using that Flava of Love money,
dude.
You remember that show?
Great pull one. I even mentioned Flava of Love. Yeah, Flava of Love was a great kind of like the Bachelorette style show he did.
It was The Bachelor, but with Flava Flav, bro.
Oh, it was.
He had that big ass watch, that big ass gold chain watch.
Man. Yeah, if you guys know,
that's what MC Hammer needed to do. He needed to get on a reality TV show. He wouldn't have gone bankrupt.
Did he have a reality TV show, MC Hammer? No.
Did he try to?
I don't know. I think everyone got one at some point.
He needed a dating show, apparently.
Yeah. No, but Flava Flav just, you know.
Cause ain't no way Public Enemy made that much money. That was back in the day. That was back before Dr. Dre even.
Yeah, but he's like, but Flava Flav is an.
And you know, them white folks weren't listening to Fight the Power.
Well, you'd be surprised, because really the rise of rap, a lot of the rap couldn't just rely on just like black listeners. So a lot of the people at those NWA concerts, like I2 concerts, were suburban white kids who listened to it. So it's crazy to think, but no, it's the reach of a Public Enemy. Even in Terminator 2 Judgment Day, John Connor's wearing a Public Enemy shirt. It's in the 90s they were saying some like real what we think of as like really woke stuff today, but like they were saying that
they were militant. They were sure to militant.
They were scary. They were scaring people. Like
Chuck D was some real shit, man. I was telling Coastal, I got to hear him. I got to hear him speak. Him in Common.
Yeah, man. Did
what do you call it? Symposium? Or
Symposium. Yeah.
Just kind of talking about rap, talking about like, you know, their heyday, talking about the difference between now and the early 90s. Uh-huh. I mean, Common was another one of the OGs he did back when he was Common Sense.
Common Sense, yeah.
I used to love her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's one of the OGs too. And Common's been talking about, you know, the commercialization of rap and the fall of the soul of rap since 95. Right, you know, we're down 20 years later. You know, Common's a legend to us. We went to watch him do the symphony concert.
It was incredible, incredible.
I've seen him live a few times. He's an actor too. As an actor, he's pretty tremendous.
Great in John Wick. Yeah,
John Wick, Seven Aces.
Smoking Aces. Aces. He's also in Wanted.
Wanted.
Great career.
Yeah, he's had a solid career. Absolutely American legend, in my opinion.
It's really cool to see these OGs like a Common, like a Flava Flav, like a Snoop Dogg. They're still relevant today and just doing positive stuff on like a
global scale. It's that nostalgia now, too. Yeah. You know, like back then, not too many people listened to them, but over the years, the legend grew.
Snoop Dogg, he's global. Yeah.
Yeah, right. And Snoop Dogg used to be famous for being, you know, in a murder case. You know, potentially going to jail for being in the Cribs or starting off gangster rap. Now he's, you know, one of the spokesmen for America. Random white folks in the suburbs love him.
I love Snoop. Like you hear that a lot. Like he's crossed over.
Yeah, it's wonderful to see. Wonderful to see.
And I guess just on that with just OGs and just old timers in this Olympics. Just looking back on just the great moments of the Olympics, I remember we were talking about that earlier, like Muhammad Ali carrying that torch, like I won't repeat it, but that was a hilarious joke you made.
I'll repeat it because I have no shame. So in the if you watch the video of Muhammad Ali lighting the torch,
it was great. In the 96 Olympics,
I am going to hell for this. I fully acknowledge. But if you watch the video, so I hadn't fully realized by that time he had Parkinson's.
Yeah, it was definitely, it's from like years of getting hit in the head. And
hit in the head. I mean, people get Parkinson's even without that, but it probably didn't help, right?
Yeah, it makes you shake.
It makes you shake. So the camera angle, you know, his hand was down near his pants, like down the side of his pants. And so the camera angle cut off around the wrist. And then so his hand started, you know, twitching back and forth, right? So again, if you're not really aware that this guy has some kind of degenerative mental disease, He very much looks like he's jacking off on camera.
On the world's biggest stage.
On the world's biggest stage, holding the Olympic torch with one hand, Mr. jacking Ali. Off with the other hand.
Mr. Ali, what are you doing?
Mr. Ali. Cassius Clay, baby.
No, that was a great moment, though. Yeah.
But, it's an inspirational moment. I really almost hate to joke about it because it's cold-blooded.
No, it was a hilarious joke, though. I couldn't.
But it is a beautiful moment. Take us through some other ones, Cozy. Some legendary historical moments.
Speaking of lighting, the guy that just light, he lit the torch with a bow and arrow and just
Barcelona 92 Olympics.
Yeah, 92 Olympics. Like, I thought that was, look, it's simple.
It's like if you've ever seen Game of Thrones.
Yep.
Really,
yep.
The cultural reference should be Olympics. If you're old enough, your cultural reference should be that Olympic shot. But if you've ever seen that kind of TV show, those kinds of old school. Bow and arrow, Robin Hood type, medieval type shows. Mm-hmm. Game of Thrones, obviously, a great example. It's, you know, that, hit the pyre from, you know, a mile away with an archer and set it on fire perfectly. And look, it's awesome every time they do it in the movies and on the TV shows. And it's even more awesome when a real person does it in real life successfully.
Yeah, this guy did it for real.
Yeah. This was real life, bro. And it's cool to see. It's one of those moments where, like, that's what you're there for at the Olympics. Watch inspirational humans do inspirational feats that you and I, Kosi, and most other people watching absolutely cannot even come remotely close to doing. And that's why it's awesome to watch. Because we can't do them. Because these people have practiced. And they have the genetic advantages and the talent to get where they are, and it's beautiful to see.
Yeah, it's what I love most about just sports. It's like, but then the Olympics kind of takes it a step further. Yes, these people that are blessed with these gifts, the athletic gifts, but then they're bringing these personal stories, which to take to this next part, another great Olympic moment, the 1968 Olympics, where in the 200 meter dash, where Tommy Smith of the USA won the 200 meter dash, and this is 1968, so this is
this is barely after the Civil Rights Act.
Martin Luther King got assassinated like a few months prior to all this. So like there's major civil unrest in the United States. And so, you know, the winner, Tommy Smith and his teammate, John Carlos, each raised, it's an iconic photo. If you've probably seen it, they're standing on the podium to get their medals. And they raise a black fist with a black glove to symbolize just unity with civil rights movement, with black people. And just to say, hey, yes, we're here representing our country in the Olympics, but we're going to use this time to say, hey, stuff isn't all rosy back where we're from. And it's sad. It's kind of, and they were kind of right. When they returned, they weren't greeted as heroes. They're kind of greeted as like kind of traitors. There was a guy in Australia who actually came in third in that race, Peter Norman. He actually stood with them in solidarity. He didn't raise his fist, but he also was down with their cause. He also got backlash in Australia, back where he came from. He was a bard. So it kind of just, it's a cool, really cool picture, really iconic picture, but like the aftermath and just what it entailed and just stuff we're even talking about to this very day. It's very powerful in that regard.
It's definitely an inspiring moment. Obviously, you know, Kosi has a little bit more of a personalized view of it, being black versus me being Colombian, but frankly just the tragedy of it, that these people are out here that are apparently important enough and valuable enough for the U.S. to count their medals,
the best in their field, or what they
to
do.
Take advantage of their athletic gifts, their hard work, their dedication, their passion for competition, but they were not important enough to be able to freely sit at a restaurant without getting yeared at.
Yeah, they weren't allowed to be heard.
Having a proper political voice, without getting treated as full equals, and frankly, heroes, not just equals, but heroes within the American historical lexicon, within the American, you know, the greatest generation of all American athletes. They're gold medal winners.
It kind of reminded me of how, like, World War II black soldiers came back from World War II, defeating the literal Nazis. They came back and like weren't greeted as heroes, or like got, they didn't get pension. A lot of stuff that like was done, and like you know, this being 20 years later.
I'm sure at least one soldier who fought and died for America's interest abroad came home and got lynched.
If
I would not be as glad as a bit surprised, at least one
in
person 40,
in 45,
45 or 14.
Man, I don't want to think about it, but yeah,
14.
Yeah, they had World War One, too. Yeah, even yeah, it's so just
it's tragic. Yeah. I guarantee you, at some point, someone that fought and died for a country got treated as less than, got treated as monstrous, got treated as
othered. Yeah, that's really what it is. And like,
and it's tragic to see.
And these people are saying, hey, we don't like being treated as such, and here's what we're capable of. And it was on a global stage. And
they knew they were going to get in trouble for it. They knew that they weren't performing the role and being the good tap dancing black man that wins the medal and then goes back and, you know, is seen but not heard.
It's very much reminded me of Jesse Owens. Yeah, speaking of just other Olympics, just to give him a quick shout out to the Jesse Owens Olympics. In front of Hitler himself, he was able just to go out and just show, just what he's capable of, and like
show one of the most racist people of all time
in 1936 to just do that with Hitler there, like it was great. And like, you know, 30 years later in 68, like more than 30 years later, like it's the progression of that was cool to see. But I guess I gotta just move us on to just the very, very last one now, just to end on a high note. Usain Bolt, he's just, in terms of Olympic history, modern Olympic history, there's no other athlete, besides Simone Biles, of course, and like a Michael Phelps, but Usain Bolt.
There's a couple other big dominant, but I will say, I have never seen a guy at the world's biggest stage stop and wave to the audience and talk shit in the middle of the race.
As he's winning.
And bro, he still set a world record.
Yeah.
He slowed himself down to wave and cheer at the audience. It's like every video you've seen. If you ever seen a Deshaun Jackson videos all these videos of people celebrating too early,
they drop the football
and then
before
disaster, then disaster strikes.
Yeah.
No, this was him celebrating too early, and then setting a world record afterwards.
Great call.
It's unbelievable. It's one of the most. He doesn't have the most medals ever or whatever. But he's one of the most stupidly dominant people who have ever come in any sport.
He's the fastest man alive.
He's the fastest man alive. He's the fastest man ever, I think we can say.
Like I think it was like a 10-second hundred. It was.
I think this Olympics, the gold medal winner was a whole 0.2 seconds, which is a huge deal. A whole 0.2 seconds behind Usain Bolt's record. I think his records are some of the longest standing in Olympics history. It's some stupid.
Yeah, I'm trying to make sure I got this correct.
It's some goofy stuff. He's the most dominant runner ever.
And this Noah Lyles guy is just amazing. So.
Yeah, this Noah Lyles guy won the gold. Very amazing, but well behind, you know, anything Usain Bolt could do. Truly, truly incredible stuff.
Okay, so yes, Usain Bolt, his record was a 9.58 for the. For a 100-meter dash, and Noah Lyles, he did not break it, so it's still the fastest. Yeah, so he got it with 9.79 seconds. So
0.2 whole seconds behind.
That's
it. Doesn't sound
crazy.
Like a lot. It doesn't sound like a lot, but for reference, the difference between first and last on the 100 meters this year was roughly 0.2 seconds. I think it was less than 0.2 seconds.
That's incredible.
So. Usain Bolt beat the first place guy this year, you know, a decade later, by more than the first place guy beat the last place guy.
He's stupid fast.
It's asinine. It's hard to put it into context. It's straight up goofy, and the guy didn't even fully try the whole time. It's something. It's always exciting when we see the. You know, stuff happen again, records be broken. But it seems like a record that's going to be sitting there for a few more years before we see it get broken.
But that'll conclude just my Olympics recap not just present stuff we're happening, but also past stuff that we've seen throughout the years of the Olympics. So, yeah, that was fun just kind of going through history and with you on that one. So
Yeah, for sure. No, Olympics is a... Memphis is definitely a pretty cool idea.
I slept honestly on it. Again, I didn't realize that they were happening this summer, so I'm glad I kind of got caught up in the last, you know, four
Always
four or five
some
days.
Good storylines. Yeah. Always some athletes you normally wouldn't pay too much attention to, frankly, right? None of us, not too many of us watch competitive swimming on a regular basis, I would hazard to guess. But, you know, and it's not a lie. It's nice. It's easy to take for granted, but the U.S. winning the most medals, you know, the most gold, most silver, most bronze, you know, getting to cheer for your country and be excited all the time. You know, I'm from a country, Colombia, where, you know, most people can name our first ever gold medal winner, right? For us, it's not, oh, how many gold medals do you have? It's how many gold medal winners do you have? You right. know what I mean? like total. It's you can name them individually. So it's cool. It's definitely cool to see that being part of the U.S. and getting to cheer for Team USA.
Most definitely, man.
But yeah, so moving on from the Olympics, it's time to debut our new segment.
Man, Play I'm excited for this, man.
Play a Haters Reel. All the haters came from far away.
The haters call. We gonna hate on reels. Oh yeah. Play a hate is real.
Oh man. Oh, yeah, hey.
Now listen, y'all. Just for a recap, getting sexy. Just for a recap, look, we're doing the opposite of what we did last week.
Yes.
Last week, basically did a guilty pleasures, dirty little cinema. Talked about movies that weren't the most popular. Talked about cozy. Liking Indiana Jones getting raped by George Lucas and Steven Spielberg.
I don't recall the movie going that way, but I guess yeah.
I'm pretty sure according to South Park that's exactly how the movie.
Okay, so Trey Parker and Matt Stone said so. Okay.
All yeah, right. I'm pretty sure that was a fully accurate description of the movie played out. That was my recollection of it, anyways. But no, listen. Today we're gonna do the opposite. We're gonna take movies that are generally well considered. Well-loved, popular movies, and we're gonna dump on them. Because he'll probably be a little bit nicer on them. He'll probably just politely disagree with their higher ranking.
No, I'm just curious to see just the movie that you're gonna pick. I know you had one just to get us started with.
Yeah, I want to get us started. I think it was a good poster child for kind of what we're going for. Okay. It's to the point where it almost might be too hated these days. But Leonardo DiCaprio and Iñárritu's
Alejandro Iñárritu's
The Revenant, the movie of.
So you think this is a movie that's hated, that has some hate?
So no. I think generally it's a well regarded movie.
Okay.
Obviously, it won several Academy Awards. Won Leo his first Oscar. Iñárritu is one of the legendary directors of our day and age, mm-hmm. right? Along with Cuarón, those the Mexican legendary directors.
Trio. Yeah, man.
Who's the other guy?
Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, Guillermo del Toro.
Alfonso Cuarón.
Especially Cuarón and Iñárritu have a bit of a similar, you know, artsy vibe.
Right, and then
a little bit of Toro is kind of a monster, kind of out there vibe. Pan's Labyrinth, Shape of Water. Yeah. But so all three legends, all three Oscar-winning directors. And, you know, I won't say this movie doesn't deserve its Oscar. Listen, in many ways, from a cinematography perspective...
Gorgeous film.
From a difficulty perspective, a technical perspective, the shots are stunning, the performances...
Like, you feel cold. Like, yeah. You feel the cold when you watch this.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
Leo's performance, again, from a degree of difficulty standpoint, one of the better... It's not a surprise he won an Oscar for this one.
It felt like a lifetime achievement.
It felt a little bit, but at the same time,
he had better performances.
It's in terms of like the amount of effort he put into his performance.
Yeah.
I would argue that it's deserved. He went out of his way to really make himself suffer for this
movie.
Yeah,
like he really earned that. Yeah.
Right. So with all that being said, generally well regarded movie, Oscar winning, all this stuff. Listen.
Uh oh.
The Revenant fucking sucks to watch.
So, like, you think it's a slog? Like, it's boring to watch, or
I've fallen asleep in other movies probably a few too many times.
Right,
right? I have infamous amongst that with my friends. You can ask my wife.
Right.
Right. But listen, I've never had a movie where I sat there an hour plus into it and I was like, you know what? I could probably take a 40-minute nap and not really miss anything important.
You know what? Yes, I can see that.
And I took that nap in the theater. And I'll tell you what, Cozy, I don't really feel like I missed anything important. I couldn't even if I went back and watched it today, I couldn't tell you which scenes I missed.
Right, yeah. It's all right. It's definitely like your classic revenge tale. Leonardo DiCaprio is trying to go after Tom Hardy, the man that, you know, unfortunately murdered his son. It's a revenge tale across the American wilderness. So he really does take that. It's like a 3-hour long movie almost.
It's a 3-hour movie. You feel it. But it's like an hour of plot. You know what I mean? It doesn't really not... Okay, but DiCaprio gets kind of betrayed by Tom Hardy's character.
Left for
and
dead.
He does like chase after him. That and bear. Then there's some stuff with Native Americans and the French-Indian War. And, you know, the beauty of the American wilderness and the frontier spirit.
Northwest Territory, yeah.
Was it Northwest?
I believe so.
I think it was actually Northeast. Oh. I think it might have been Northeast because it was close to the French-Indian War. And,
okay, on that border.
And that was before America had expanded all the way to the West. But I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, no, it's in the Dakotas.
So kind of the middle, before they had fully gone Manifest Destiny and explored the whole continent, right? But look, again, beautiful movie, well made movie, but it's one of those movies, you know, people don't go back and be like, hey guys, you know it'd be fun, let's go back and rewatch The Revenant. You know, that's a sentimental movie. You know, that doesn't top anybody's favorites lists. As far as performances, yeah, Leo won his first Oscar, but you named it, Cozy. Felt like a little bit of a lifetime achievement.
You definitely had better performances.
Maybe not more difficult, maybe not more strenuous.
Well, no, just like a better performance.
Memorable, right? Yeah. You remember his Wolf of Wall Street character.
Oh, yeah.
You remember his Gatsby. Even Blood Diamond, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, Inception, Titanic.
Titanic, yeah.
You remember these characters much, much more. Even a not even all that great movie, something like, what's the one with Daniel Day-Lewis? Gangs of New York.
Gangs of New York, right? He was in that, yeah.
Not like an amazing movie, but like this character stands out. The Departed, all these movies. Legendary role after legendary role. Arguably the greatest actor of our generation. And he wins the Oscar for this. Not that it wasn't a tremendous performance in its own right, but I couldn't tell you anything about the character. Other than he was just angry and fighting a bear the whole movie.
No, I definitely see that.
I can't even tell you his name. Like,
no, his name is Hugh Glass. It's based on like a true story. And the crazy part about it is like the events kind of were fudged, but most of the time, for most of it, it did happen. These are actual events. I think what I love most about Iñárritu's work in this, all of Iñárritu's work from Birdman to this, they're immersive. They put you there with the main character. It's a very different film from Birdman, but I think what I appreciated a lot about The Revenant was you're there with Hugh Glass. It's a very personal story. Like his son, unfortunately, it's a 10-year-old movie, but his son is murdered. And it's that story of like, what will you do to, you know, exact revenge? And like having the backdrop of the wilderness. And again, just that bear, there are a lot of memorable scenes in it that DiCaprio is a part of, especially that bear attack. It's one that, you know, it's harrowing to watch. It's horrible, but you're right. Like I think after that, I can definitely see how, you know, you can kind of trail off and, you know, kind of like start looking at your watch, looking at your phone to see just how much time is left. But I think it has a very satisfying conclusion. I definitely when he meets up with Tom Hardy and they have their standoff and like everything's crescendoing and like all the stuff that DiCaprio has been through, it all meets there. And like, it's just that story of just, you know, what the world can do to you, what you can become. But definitely it's kind of drowned out by just so much just plot, so much stuff. So no, I definitely can understand like you spewing hate at this movie. But I have to defend it. It's a gorgeous looking movie. It's gorgeous.
It is a gorgeous movie. It's a very well made movie. It's a very well-made movie.
I definitely get your criticism, though. I didn't think about that.
I don't even necessarily hate it like entirely, but I just feel like it's a great example of the kind of movie where it's like...
Do you think it needs critically, to be cut too short? Like, cut a little time off?
It is one of those movies where you can tell the director had nobody to say no to him. Like, he had become too legendary.
Like a Tarantino kind of?
Not even. Tarantino actually has been better about editing his own movies. I think a better example is Scorsese lately. The Irishman, Killers of the Flower Moon. It's like, hey, I know you're one of the absolute legends of American cinema, or just cinema in general, and in Iñárritu's case. But you still need somebody.
Just dial it back a little bit.
to be able to sit there that you can respect that tells you, no, man, you didn't need. I mean, that's not just one or two scenes. You didn't need this whole half hour.
Yeah,
you
could
have cut this whole half hour.
I agree. I kind of wish that these big. I understand it's tough, but I kind of wish these big directors kind of had that kind of communal approach to it. Like, hey, get another pass. Like, you know, your eyes aren't always the best.
In
sometimes,
in some ways, like again, Kills of the Flower Moon and Irishman are also good examples. It's impressive filmmaking. It's impressive acting performances. There's a lot of impressive technical stuff going there. But it's hard to get over the fact that you sit there and watch these movies and you're like, man, you really didn't need every one of these scenes.
Yeah.
You really, you know, are getting too caught up on your own, on the smell of your own farts.
In question, the fact that it looks great cinematography-wise, it's lit great, it's shot great, that's not enough for you.
It helps.
But it's not enough.
It helps. Obviously, I'm not saying it's an actively terrible movie.
Right.
But again, I have little to no interest in going back and watching The Revenant.
I got you.
Right. I can go back and watch Birdman. That's an incredible movie.
Yeah, I think Birdman is the, and I agree.
It's a little bit of an unsettling, disturbing movie in its own ways, right? It's not a pleasurable watch.
True, but it has a lot more rewatchability than The Revenant, and I'm a guy that loves
and the technical skill is like also that. There. The one shot type take.
Oh yeah, it's not like some people say. Oh, it's novel. It's yeah, but like
it's a little bit of a gimmick, but it's also the technical talent and expertise required to do that well.
Yeah. And how it's used to tell these stories is also what makes it so good. There are a lot of things going on with that, but yeah, Birdman. That's a whole other whole other episode we could do on Birdman. But
I kind of wanted to give that as a good example of a movie. I think most people would be able to understand that is well liked, but not necessarily or well respected, but not necessarily well liked.
Okay.
All right. So this is where I'm gonna get a little more. A little more edgy.
A little more flagrant. Okay, let's hear it.
I think A New Hope, and frankly, especially Return of the Jedi, but even A New Hope is a pretty shit movie.
Okay. And
Star
and
Wars, A New Hope.
A New Hope, 77?
77.
Utter classic.
Now, I honestly think Last Jedi is sort of a bad movie. But I'm
Last Jedi or Return of the
Return
Jedi?
Return of the Jedi. Return of the Jedi, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. Last Jedi is probably not even a controversial opinion to call it bad. Return of the Jedi, I could go on that one. But listen, I'm gonna break down some stuff in A New Hope.
All right, let's hear it.
Because this has been bothering me for a long time.
Okay.
First of all, I didn't get the nostalgia blast of, watching this as a kid, and it's like my first big... You know, sci-fi, space opera, kind movie, right?
So it didn't connect with you like when you saw it as a kid. I'm like, this is
what
cool.
I watched as a kid was Phantom Menace, right? That was my kid Star Wars experience.
Okay.
So I got to watch Duel of the Fates.
Yeah, it was an awesome fight.
Or the Jedi fighting droidicas and shield droids and stuff. Those were my first experiences with Jedi and Star Wars, right?
Right.
Not to say that Phantom Menace is a good movie, but I don't think too many people consider that a particularly great one.
Right.
All right, so A New Hope. Let's break a couple things down, all right? Because, seriously, it kind of blows my mind. I can get why people think it's fun in the same way somebody might be like, American Pie is a fun movie, or you know what I mean? Or just random adventure movies. Or like, I don't know, The Mask is a fun movie. Or you know what I mean? Just like good, fun summer blockbuster. I can kind of get that. But no, it's supposed to be a big classic, right? You said it yourself. It's one of those cinema classics.
Yeah, it definitely is.
All right, so let's break a couple things down.
First of all, Luke Skywalker. Mm-hmm. All right. Biggest no personality, empty douchebag in the world. Is what I honestly imagine if you took Link from the Legend of Zelda okay. and made him into a movie character. All right, this is a guy who, no lie, watches his aunt and uncle, whose only family he's known in his entire life, they get brutally barbecued.
Yeah, they're like vapor, like
skin barbecued. Melted there's cinders off. Left. Yeah. There's cinders. It's not even like, oh, there's just a dead body. No, there's cinders left. There's a left.
Crazy smash cut to their shard remains.
And then he's just like, oh, darn, better head off into space and go with this other space Jedi dude because I have nothing else to do there. I don't think he sheds a single tear. Am I misremembering that?
No, he definitely gets weepy eye. That's why I'm like, I don't think it's like he didn't care. I think that's more in Mark Hamill's portrayal and more so than George Lucas's writing. It just
like he was.
I see what you mean.
Happy go lucky adventurous mood.
It kind of switched
pretty much immediately afterwards, mm-hmm. right? There's no rage. Mm-hmm. There's no like with Anakin Skywalker, right? For all the problems with the prequels, you know, his mom gets brutally killed. I mean, I'd be very upset about that. Right, that would the kind of thing. Why did Anakin fall to the dark side? Yeah, I mean, that's rage. The kind of thing yeah. that would make you want to feel.
You wanted to save people you
rage,
loved.
It would yeah. make you rage out. It would make you want to get revenge. Luke is like, oh darn, my aunt and uncle died. Oh well, time to get to space. You know what I mean? Not even okay. like a small funeral or anything. I don't know if I'm just misremembering this.
No, I think maybe. Not you're not misremembering it, but because this is, I think. It's the hero's journey, and this is Luke's call to action. Before all this, Luke was like saying, "Nah, I want to go to Tashi Station, get power converters." He wasn't really answering the call. Now he's been thrust because his aunt and uncle were killed, so he didn't have like what we would think is the correct response to this call to action. But it was he did respond still, but it wasn't like.
Oh, it man, was the link. Go. It was the link from yeah, Princess Zelda like response,
video,
where it's like
video game stuff.
Yeah. Oh. Arg, and darn. Then he just went on with his adventure, you
yeah.
know.
You know, and yeah, and Obi-Wan was right there to see him.
Obi-Wan seemed more traumatized by it than he did. It's because I remember just because at that time Alec Guinness was like, a substantially man. Better actor than Mark Hamill. I mean, Mark Hamill made a turnaround, but he was not brilliant actor in Episode One,
bro. And Darth Vader straight up said no disintegration. They were right; they didn't disintegrate. Uncle. Owen and his
they
wife.
Just barbecued
this barbecue. Okay, all right. So Luke.
So, okay. So
like
all right. So, what's so it's already. One? So, what's so it's already one? Starting off poorly. Okay. So then there's another moment where I get that it's an 80s movie and sometimes you're not gonna have fully developed characters in every part of it. Okay. So we have a scenario where Princess Leia, Darth Vader knows she had like she stole some plans, trying to get the Death Star plans back, right? Uh-huh. And like it's trying to torture her and like trying to convince her to give back the plans.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is awesome bad guy Darth Vader, mm-hmm. right? Immediately, before any kind of they apparently have a machine that's capable of like torturing the information out of her, even.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to negotiate with her, be like, hey, we have this awesome, powerful station you're on. We're going to fuck up your planet if you don't tell us what we want. She sits there and is like, ha, I'm not going to listen to anything you say. And then he's like, okay. And then he just blows up
Alderaan.
Blows up their entire planet. I mean, obviously that's going to cause people to rebel. Suddenly you blowing up an entire planet because one person on it was rebellious. You know what I mean? That's the appropriate response. Just seriously, imagine us nuking Iraq because just one guy over there, you know, like one random guy was part of 9/11. So, oh, we got to nuke Iraq and kill every Iraqi possible. That's what it felt like.
I think in
no
in,
negotiation, yeah. no threats,
in,
no.
I think in Leia's case, it's just to show that, you know, she's a teenager, so that's how a teenage diplomat would actually try to like do that. I think she was also trying to call his bluff.
I don't know that she fully realized that they could.
That's the thing. I think that's why she was acting like
he could have easily blown up a moon or something or some uninhabited planet and then been like, okay, so this is what's going to happen to your planet if you don't give us the plans. But they're like, no, you know what? Fuck the plans. We're just going to blow up your planet without any effort to getting the plans. You know, you don't kill the victim when you're torturing them, right? Yeah. You don't kill your leverage. And then they're like, oh, it doesn't matter. We didn't actually need the leverage. We just have this torture machine that's going to give us the information anyways.
I think it was also
We were just doing it for fun.
It was also Darth Vader just trying to flex and be evil because, remember, this is right after Rogue One. they've already shown
at the time Rogue One didn't exist.
Okay,
no using future movies to retroactively make this movie better.
Well, I think it's almost like saying if you take away such and such from a movie, you can't.
No, because in 1977 it came out. This was the movie that came out. This was the movie that released.
I'll just say this:
a movie 30 years that came out 30 years on the line doesn't suddenly make the first one better.
No, true. Not to. I guess I won't use Rogue One, but still, you can still say that by the time they've done that, they know that what the Death Star can do. That's what I'm trying to say. So Darth Vader is already ready to get busy with the Death Star. So he's like, oh. You want to play?
But again, at no point does he say, "Hey, you give me this information, I'm gonna blow up your planet."
Oh yeah, it was a major.
He just like help.
It was a major bad guy, crazy mustache twirling move. Yeah. Because I think that's what. No, and I definitely see what you mean.
Again, so Leia just watched her whole planet get blown up and get disintegrated, right?
Yeah.
Luke gets on the Death Star, saves her, watches Obi-Wan die, right? So the most sentimental. The most devastated a character gets on screen at any part of any of the movie is not Luke when he loses the family he's known his entire life, not Leia when she loses her entire planet and everyone she loves, but Luke getting sad that the old dude he's been hanging out with for 30 minutes just died.
So
that's the most devastating, heartfelt moment of the movie.
So the characters in this movie don't really have... Correct. They don't act like real.
They don't act like fully realized characters.
Okay, I see what you mean.
Like you'd think their entire lives started when the movie started.
They definitely feel like characters out of a storybook. But I think what Lucas was kind of going for in 76, 77. I definitely get that. I definitely get what you mean.
I see how it can be fun, but again, are we talking about like a fun summer blockbuster or one of the defining, American cinema? Like it just has this incredibly prestigious spot in the general cultural discussion. Mm-hmm. Star Wars coming out is supposed to be a big deal. There's still a huge amount of Star Wars discussion and shows and everything, 40 years down the line. But the movie that started it all, my last thing I'll shit on real quick is that Luke gets about 30 minutes to maybe a few hours, depending on how generous you want to be, of Jedi training his entire life, right? Like, literally, Obi-Wan barely managed to explain the Force to him, and he gets the little child, like, first Jedi lesson, like, the thing you learn at the first day of Jedi camp.
Yeah, get some Padawan training real quick.
Yeah, we literally see in other movies down the line, little kids who are 5 years old training with the same methods. And somehow, even though he's never been in any kind of war, he's never really flown a spaceship in outer space, he's never done any of this stuff,
but
they give him an X-Wing, which I don't think they have a ton of, but they give him an X-Wing, send him out, and somehow Obi-Wan's able to communicate with him and teach him enough Force powers that he doesn't even need the computers and everything else. He can just magic space bend the missiles into the spaceport that blows up the Death Star.
Yeah, I think that I definitely see how that's like, wait, how is that? But I definitely chunk all that up too in that story beat as Luke being, he's the chosen one in this story. Sometimes the chosen one gets to do some pretty OP stuff that at a glance looks like, wait, how? But if you look at how it is, one can deduce that Luke, yes, he was kind of like away from the Force, but just by being with Obi-Wan, learning about his lineage a little bit, he had those innate abilities within him. I think it's kind of reminds me of what happened with Rey. I think it was kind of said, hey, she had these abilities, but,
A lot of the criticisms people have of Rey, oh, she just randomly learned how to save her fight and won this big fight immediately with almost no training. I mean, Luke didn't get any serious training. Obi-Wan just kind of lectured him for a little bit.
Yeah.
And gave him the Force 101 first day class.
No, you're right. From a screenwriting, from like a story standpoint, yeah, but I kind of sort of put those in
if you want to talk about character. Chosen one story.
They're the chosen one,
I'll give you an example of a story that I think does this well. Okay, Matrix. Right, okay, they even call it outright. Yeah. Call it the chosen one,
or the one,
one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so Neo starts off random, weak dude is not initially successful in either way. Very real and relatable reactions to all his circumstances, continuously wants to set himself down and say he's not the one, has to go through this suffering, this trial by fire, where he actually has to get better. Like, he has to actually work at it. He actually has to suffer through. He has to suffer through the bad consequences of him not being good enough, right? He sees Morpheus gets captured. He sees all this bad stuff. He actually dies, right?
Yeah.
At one point. So again, it's that buildup. You don't suddenly get to, oh, Mark Hamill had a 30-minute montage. You don't have that montage on the ship where Neo got the montage, and now he's good for the rest of the movie, and now he's the chosen one, and he's defeating the bad guys.
Because I would say the Matrix kind of also cheated, because they just downloaded his stuff into him.
But they did that, and then they still had him get his ass kicked repeatedly.
Okay,
Luke never really did until the second movie. That's why I respect Empire Strikes Back. That felt like a more fully realized movie. That felt like actual complex characters, you know, a proper plot. This felt like, you know, a silly summer, like a silly, you know, half-written version of the hero's tale, but they had it some space and swords. Also, the lightsaber fight was really bad between Obi-Wan and get people hadn't used to it, and I know we said we weren't going to use future movies, but coming off the prequels, those lightsaber fights, and suddenly seeing, you know, the limp dick lightsaber fight between Obi-Wan and Darth Vader, that didn't do any favors. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, for that argument there, I'll just throw out, because you are using the prequels. But I upon seeing like a Duel of the Fates and Darth Maul, looking back in the 1780s, it's like, but I'd say this, I think hearing your gripes and like legit criticisms about it, I think those are criticisms I definitely see. But for me and like a lot of people, it just didn't bother us enough to make it bad, because there was so much good stuff. Because what's undeniable is the world building it had, what it basically inspired, just a bunch of stuff. Like what it did for the movie industry itself, like THX, like the sound, Skywalker sound, like just ILM, like all the stuff, like it's maybe not from a movie standpoint, but part of its legacy, it's undeniable. But
I can appreciate that. I can appreciate its legacy, its influence were massive. I just think even today you hear a lot of, oh, the prequels and the sequels are bad, but oh, the original trilogy is the classics. And I sit there and watch the original trilogy and I'm like, where's the classic?
I'm actually the opposite. Like, the acting in the prequels are so bad, but the fights are cool, but that's not enough for me. You have to have good acting.
I don't think the prequels were good, but at least the effects were good, and I had the kind of nostalgia for them.
And the story for the prequels is incredible. The actual story is incredible.
And the world building for the prequel, also that's incredible. Why we had so many good video games and
shows and books off the prequels.
But the dialogue, the writing, so many things were bad in the prequels.
Yeah.
But again, the original trilogy, I think it's a... I mean, don't even get me started on Return of the Jedi.
That's my favorite one of the trilogies.
Yeah, don't even get me started on that bullshit. fucking Ewoks. little teddy bears, y'all. I mean, people talk shit about Jar Jar Binks. I don't know how the Ewoks aren't worse, personally.
You don't know how the Ewoks are?
Yeah.
I'd rather chill with them than Jar Jar.
Jar
Jar sucks, bro. Each his own, but...
I mean, I think the Ewoks suck, too. Bro, you're hanging out with little teddy bears, and you're taking it seriously? Well, it's a sci-fi movie.
The Ewoks could potentially eat me, and I'd still take my chances on Endor, bro.
Bro, I mean...
I'm with Jar Jar anywhere, man.
I'm pretty sure Jar Jar could actually eat you. Maybe not in a good way. Sexual harassment kind of way, you know?
Yeah, Misa don't like that.
Misa don't like her. No, listen, I'm not trying to defend Jar Jar. I'm just trying to say Ewoks.
I can... They're definitely fellas that were trying to sell a toy in 83.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're cute. Definitely, it's...
It's one thing to have cute little...
Yeah.
Cuddly creatures.
Yeah.
It's one thing to make the cute little cuddly creatures a major plot point. You know what I mean? It's the day was saved by the Ewoks. Really? That's what we're going
with. Having the stormtroopers kept getting rocks and sticks thrown at them was kind of Saturday morning cartoonish.
Yeah.
But again, it didn't bother me in the grand scale because we were finishing off Luke's story. Like Luke was ending with his father. Like a lot of stuff that I thought was really cool that they were kind of bringing around to a conclusion with Return of the Jedi. But again, that's another discussion.
Oh, another quick moment. I guarantee you, when writing, A New Hope, the first Star Wars movie, there was no part of George Lucas that had even slightly considered that Leia was Luke's sister. I'd be willing to put big money on that.
Oh, well, no, just it's clear just from the way that they... the way they are in the first one.
It's clear you could that's tell supposed it's to be a love
on,
interest.
It was tacked on in Empire. Yes.
I blame... And not even Empire.
I don't know why he tacked it on.
In Return of the Jedi.
Well, the whole kiss though wasn't
it was in Empire. Made out in Empire.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, Empire.
Oh, okay, but yeah. They didn't establish that they were siblings until Return.
Yes, yeah. Which was weird.
Which is very weird. Because
we had a whole 3 years. A whole 3 years after the kiss.
I blame cocaine for that. I 100% think George Lucas was on too many drugs, and just forgot what he wrote.
The cause of and answer to all of life's problems.
I am willing to bet a substantial amount of money that the answer to the plot holes and the seeming rewrites in Star Wars is because George Lucas was doing a lot of drugs.
Perhaps. It was the '80s, the mid '80s.
Yeah. I mean, it was just like widely accepted back then. Cozy, you want to hit on any movie real quick, or you want to just call it for today?
No, like really, this first episode of Player Hate is Real was definitely a Juan centric episode. Give me some time to get my hate on. I'm trying to think of a couple. There are a few I'm thinking of, but just give me a little bit of time to come with the heat, because I definitely enjoyed the hot takes you
the
brought.
Haterade.
But
the
no, haterade. I'll definitely still defend A New Hope. It's not my favorite of the Star Wars, but just for what it
I'll give respect to Empire Strikes Back. But for me, the best quality Star Wars content has been Rogue One and Andor.
Rogue One and Andor, especially Andor.
Especially Andor, guys, but Rogue One is probably my favorite movie.
Yeah, no, it's great. I love Solo. Solo's been my favorite of just fun watching. Besides Return of the Jedi,
I have a lot of the same problems I have with New Hope of Solo, but nobody pretends Solo is a classic, so I'm like, yeah, it's a fun movie.
Yeah, it's
not
fun.
Something I'd go out of my way to go back and watch, but it's a fun movie.
Yeah, and I won't like try and defend it on like.
Yeah, but nobody goes up to me and goes like, hey, you know, by the way, New Hope is a stone cold classic. I have a hard time with that assessment.
I got you.
That's where we are. So what else we got on the show, Cozy? Oh, are we gonna do a quick one shot?
Oh, review? Right.
Listen, I think we can both agree. I think I honestly fell asleep watching this. It's not great. Zorro. Sorry, we watched Amazon Prime. I think it was drama.
Yeah, we'll do this in like a minute. So yeah, so Zorro. Just real quick recap. Amazon Prime has a Zorro show. It's based on the long running comic book strip series of the same name about a Max vigilante who goes and just fights crime in the Spanish in Spain. So.
Mexico.
In Mexico. So he is Spanish. Alejandro de la Vega is Spanish in this one. So yeah, it's a
I thought he was Native American.
No, he's not Native American. No, he's Spanish in this one. So okay. The 2024 series stars Miguel Bernardeo as de la Vega, Renata Noti as his love interest Alurita, and Rodolfo Sancho as Pedro Victoria. So this is just it's a straight up run-of-the-mill origin story for Zorro. My run-in with Zorro, probably yours, is the 98 Massive Zorro with Antonio Banderas.
Hannibal Lecter.
Anthony Hopkins. And Catherine Zeta-Jones. It's a great movie. This show is not it. If fans of that movie, if you're a Zorro fan, this show does have the trimmings of it. You know, it does follow Diego de la Vega. He's a young landowner, and it's all about he has a vendetta against someone who also masquerades as Zorro. So it's a it was a really cool premise, but you couldn't really tell from that just watching that first episode. I don't know about you, but I was besides being bored. I was just kind of like confused throughout because I was following and I'm trying to. Okay, this is so-and-so, but just, it wasn't even like a language thing, it's just like a writing type thing, and just had a really weird flow. For you, like, did you have that same issue with that, or you just fall asleep?
I don't know, Sue.
Oh, man.
I'm a huge fan of the 98 Zorro movie. I'm a huge, huge fan.
Same
I think
here.
That's a first big successful Latin American superhero movie.
Yeah, it was definitely, yeah.
People don't like, people don't often consider that like that, but that was, that definitely was. There's absolutely no difference between Batman and Zorro.
Oh, yeah, no, he's definitely like Batman, as he has like a, and even in this one, they're also kind of a, he's more so like the Christian Bale Batman, where he's like, he's trying to keep up his social light thing. He's trying to just be kind of a douchebag, but like, it's, again, it wasn't working for me, just in terms of how it was portrayed, and the main guy, you know, he's just, it just wasn't doing it for me.
Yeah, not a strongly recommended episode. So far, the one-shots have been a little bit of a disappointment.
We haven't, you're right, there hasn't been like an incredible one-shot that we've
even, I mean, maybe Sound Euphonium had.
Sound Euphonium was.
I feel like it had a market where that would really appreciate it. I've actually tried to recommend my wife start getting into it.
Sound Euphonium, yeah.
I could see maybe on your end, I could see how there's a good market for that. It just necessarily wasn't necessarily for us. This just didn't feel great.
Yeah, so that is our glowing review on Zorro 2024. In terms of the one shot, would we recommend going past the first episode, Juan? How about you? Would you recommend this?
I almost want to, just because it's Zorro and I want to like give it hype, but you know, it's not enough to just take an old IP, an old beloved IP. You have to actually make quality stuff with it.
Exactly. And if I'd say this, I wouldn't recommend it. If you're a fan of Zorro, if you're a big fan, I'd say watch the 98 film, Martin Campbell film.
Even the second one. The second one wasn't great, but
Legend of Zorro.
It still has some fun elements.
Yeah.
It's kind of corny with the kid and stuff, but it has some fun elements.
Freaking kid. You know what? I'll say that too. Anyway,
anytime they add a kid in a sequel, you can tell it's going to be bad. But
after Short Round, Hollywood learned the wrong idea after Short Round in terms of having a precocious child be your sidekick. So, yeah. But anyway, in terms of one-shotting, we both would not recommend one-shotting past this episode. So, yeah, that's been one shot for this week. And look out in the next episode for us to spin for the very next episode of One Shot.
That's right. All right, so time to head over to our plug of the week.
Oh, man, it's about that time.
Because you want to kick us off, or?
Oh, man, so my plug of the week is a funny one. So, Freevee. So, Freevee is a great... this is not a plug. I'm just trying to frame this. So, Freevee is one of those free apps where you can, like, watch free shows for just, you know, just watch, like, you know, 3 minutes of commercials. So, on Freevee, I came across a show based upon a best-selling Scholastic book series that I think maybe you read or have seen as a kid, called Animorphs. Oh yes, there was a show in 1999 called Animorphs, starring the Iceman.
Wait, this is a 99 show?
Yeah, 1999. It's a 1999 show starring...
Well, that's when the books were still coming out.
Yeah, while they were coming out. Yes, they wanted to strike while iron's hot, starring Sean Ashmore, the Iceman himself from the X-Men movies. A really young Sean Ashmore.
And Lamplighter?
Yeah, he was Lamplighter. Yes,
recently. Yeah, was it?
Yeah.
That's you know when you showed up in The Boys?
Yes, I did.
Oh, that's fucking Iceman.
And also, fun fact, he has a twin who acts in other shows that aren't X-Men or...
Yes, he has a twin. That freaked me out when
That also freaks me out to think there's another guy like Iceman out there. But yeah, I love these books as a kid. Like, I remember just the covers were freaky looking at first as a kid, and then...
The covers are amazing. For those uninitiated, Animorphs, the basic concept was that it was these kids with the power to transform into animals...
By touching them.
Yeah, they would get the power to transform into various animals. And, you know, so the book covers would show the process of going, like, starting from a human and then slowly morphing, frame by frame into an animal.
How did that not scare us?
Yeah,
kids?
So it would, like, be, like,
freaky looking.
Still mostly look human-looking person, but with like the beak of a bird, and then it would get more pronounced with each one until it fully transformed into the animal.
Wild.
It's some very 90s shit. It's the kind of stuff that we have way better special effects, way better ways of showing this stuff these days.
And man, did they not have that in 99.
Yeah, back then it was like, you know, 10, they had 10 whole frames to show this, so they had to show the entire transformation of those 10 frames.
It's, like, the CG for 99, I'd say this, they do show the kids transforming into various animals. There's, like, there's some practical effects, but it's just, it's late 90s. It looks very cheap. The acting's kind of off.
Cozy, you're the one that's recommending this show.
Yeah, no, but I say that because it was a real kick to the nostalgia. But in terms of just, oh man, I didn't even know that they made this in this series, because the books are great, but it didn't do the books any justice. So my part of my plug would also be just to find the Scholastic books of Animorphs and read them. Reading is great. Reading is fun. It's not hard if you have a library card, as Arthur would say. So yes, that is my plug of the week. Speaking of Arthur, why is Joe Rogan dressed like Arthur during his specials? That I don't know what. I didn't think he knew what the show was, but
yeah, no, it's like a special. I actually saw a meme of him, like Arthur replaced, like on his body, because he looked so much dressed like Arthur.
It's uncanny. But shout out to
Arthur the aardvark from the PBS show. Not,
yes, yes.
Not Arthur Christmas, right. or anybody else.
The one from all the memes, all the youngins out there. But yeah, I'm sorry. That's been my plug of the week. What's yours, Juan?
So my plug of the week, I want to plug a new show I've been watching.
All right.
Kite Man, hell yeah.
Oh, man. Hey, shout out to, I remember Cousin Chris was telling me to watch this, but I haven't gotten a chance to, and he swears by it as well. So
yeah, it's a fun little show. If you've watched the Harley Quinn show, it's a spinoff of that. And the Harley Quinn is already kind of a spinoff, a parody, really, of DC animated.
Yeah, yeah.
It follows like the comic book DC or DC universe, or really the animated universe DCU. Mm. So they put a lot of references and stuff that you're only really going to get if you're fully familiar with that, right? They use a lot of the original character designs and models and stuff. But yeah, Harley Quinn was already a lot of fun. That's also a recommended show, yes. Frankly. So that's already in season 3 or 4, I believe.
I think season 4 has started, so yeah, it's in the 4th
season.
Yeah,
and then Kite Man was basically a character from the early seasons, was about to marry Poison Ivy early on, and then, frankly, a joke, literally a dude with a kite. That's his power. He just has a big kite on his back. Not like a magical kite that, no, it's just a big kite. Like he just flies around in the air, and he doesn't have good wind. That's it. He can't do anything. So yeah, that's his power. And he's just like a goofy dude. He's like a douche, not even a douche, like a dude bro.
Okay.
A dude bro, okay. Kind of character. If you watch the first season, it's the same character. And so yeah, they come in here, they buy a bar, kind of like Cheers. And then they just get up to shenanigans.
That sounds like
they
fun.
Keep a lot of the same references and stuff. Only one thing I didn't like, they used to have a Giancarlo Esposito as Lex Luthor, a very goofy, over-the-top, kind of homoerotic Lex Luthor. And now it's what's his name? He died. Lance Reddick.
Oh, I heard about him being like one of his last voice.
Yeah, I think this might be his last. He's had a couple of like, this is his last
like voice acting role.
He's one of the voice acting legends.
Yeah, he's just great voice. Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty. He was a legend of Vox Arcana.
Yeah, Vox Machina. He had a voice on there.
Vox Machina. Yeah. He was in Castlevania.
Man.
Isaac. I think he was in a game called Destiny, in a game my wife played. Horizon Zero Dawn.
Oh, man, isn't that?
Or Horizon Zero Dawn. Yeah, he's in all kinds of stuff. He's one of the famous voice actors of our time.
I know for his screen presence, but man, his voice acting.
His screen presence is pretty great, but his voice acting, the thing is, he looks a little bit skinny in his screen presence. He looks a little bit like a kind of low-key guy.
He's tall, but no, he's not filled out.
So he doesn't, if he went full on with his voice, it would kind of be a mismatch between his appearance and how his voice.
Yeah, I've heard him. Like, I remember him on The Wire. I remember him from that.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
But then, you put him in a booth and give him free reign to do like play with his voice.
It's natural.
He does some very villainous voices, some very deep, respectable, regal sounding voices. Absolute legend. R.I.P. to him. It's an absolute shame we're not gonna see more of him. John Wick, The Wire, all kinds of voice acting we just went over. Truly a legend. Sad to see him gone. But yeah, one of his last performances you can catch in this Kite Man show.
All right, man. Well, thanks for that plug of the week, Juan. And dude, and thank you, man. And I want to thank not just Juan, but thank you, viewers. Again, we've gone past 20. We're old, Mooney's old enough to drink, so I want to thank y'all for rocking with us all this time and to continue rocking with us. And we'll have more content for you. So again, you can like it. Please like and subscribe to us on Spotify under the name It Was Mooney, and you can find us on YouTube under the same name. We can find other our long form podcast videos and other content that we're working on. And again, I've been Cozy, and I've been joined always by
Honey B.
Until next time, guys, peace.
Adios.